This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Novelist Michael Zadorian is a medium for a certain kind of Michigander. In books like The Leisure Seeker and Beautiful Music, he revels in characters who may not be living in high style, but who find ways to embrace dysfunction and even build on it as a kind of wayfinder for identity. His latest novel, The Narcissism of Small Differences, brings it back to Zadorian's hometown of Ferndale. Zadorian's doing an online author talk this evening to mark the occasion of the book's publishing. So, Michael, the title of the novel is a psychology concept that's written about in academic circles, but has also been taken up by armchair philosophers like Christopher Hitchens over the years. Why did the narcissism of small differences, why did that concept grab you?
I wound up pitching a bunch of titles to my editor, and I threw that one in there just as kind of an outlier. I thought, I don't think anyone's going to like this one, but I'm going to put it in there anyways because I think it's interesting.
And that was the one you ended up going with.
And that's the one we ended up going with, and there was something about it that just resonated. And, you know, it's not a title that has any direct relevance to the story or anything like that. It just kind of was one of those titles that sort of felt like the book.
At the same time, I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, this is a book about two people who have, on paper, kind of have their adult lives more or less together, but are still sort of plagued by this feeling that something is not quite there. And the narcissism of small differences is, as a concept, is like, when people who don't have a lot of ideological or demographic distance perceive huge differences between them amongst themselves about whether they're really differentiated, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think I think that the term comes up in sometimes for explanations for why there are like border wars and things like that. You have people that are practically the exact same people, but you're on that side of the wall or the fence or the whatever, or the country line, but we hate them so much. And it's like, you know, it makes no sense really. And, you know, there's a part in the book where one of the characters, Joe, he kind of makes reference to a book called The Dud Avocado by Elaine Dundy. And it takes place in Paris in the 50s, but she talks about this group of these expat sort of, they're nonconformists. And she mentions that they're so strongly nonconformist that they're practically indistinguishable from each other. And there was something about that. And that's probably the part of the book that makes me feel like, okay, there's the reason for the title right there.
So your main characters are Joe and Anna, a couple who live in Ferndale, which is also where you live. And they're in this period of life where they're sort of stuck. They've been together for more than a decade as a couple. And things start happening. Anna starts a friendship that may be a little bit more than friendly with one of her coworkers. And Joe has developed a habit with online porn that he knows is probably pretty disturbing, but he doesn't quite give up. What did you draw on to find their story, or how did they come to you?
It's interesting. I think I sort of wanted to look at, I don't know, the people, you know, as an adult, you start to realize that, oh, I'm attracted to these kinds of people, or these kinds of people tend to be my friends. And I really started to think about that. And Ferndale is probably, you know, other than Ann Arbor, you know, I think we're probably one of the more sort of, I don't know, whatever, free thinking parts of the, you know, of Michigan, you know, not, you know, no offense to others, but, you know, and, you know, and I realized that, okay, I became interested in just the kind of people that I surrounded myself with.
Right.
And Ferndale has a lot of artists and writers and musicians and public radio people. And, you know, so I kind of wanted to to write about them. And also, I was really inspired by a particular artist who used to do that sort of thing. Another writer, Don Powell, whom we were talking about earlier. I really kind of wanted, she wrote these really just sparkling, super witty, but really, really smart kind of comedies of manners about, she wrote them about the Midwest, but then she moved, you know, but she did a whole series of them about New York, and those were kind of my favorite ones. And it was always a big sort of ensemble of crazy kind of creative types. And I think I took a lot of inspiration from them or from those books. And that really started to get me thinking about the people I knew and, you know, why we wind up friends with each other, you know, the families we kind of build around ourselves, especially when we don't necessarily have the, you know, traditional type families.
Yeah. Will you read for us from the book?
Sure. This in this part, Joe has had kind of a tiff with Anna, and he is at a bar, and he runs into a friend of his named Chick, and they have just had Joe and Anna have had a conversation. Anna decides that they are weird, and he tries to convince her that they aren't weird. But that does not, she's not buying it. Anyway, so he's discussing it with his friend Chick later at the bar. Joe raises upper lip. Anna's in one of her moods. She's decided that we're weird. So, what's the news about that? You are weird. Actually, I told her that we're disgustingly normal. There's nothing more normal than being with the same person forever. You're angling for a threesome, aren't you, huh? Bring a little spice in the house? A little strange, huh? Am I right? Joe glared at Chick until he stopped. Sorry, said Chick sheepishly. This happen often? It's been happening more lately. I think it's because she's coming up on her 40th birthday. Chick's eyes widened. Really? I knew you were older than me, but I had no idea you guys were that old. Joe shrugged. Yeah, well, no kids. We're not grossly overweight. Oh, and also age-inappropriate clothing. You'd be surprised how much that helped. So what's the problem? I thought you guys had it whipped. You are the only couple I know that actually seem happy. Us? Really? Yeah, aren't you? No, we're happy, I guess. It's just that sometimes Anna seems to want something. I'm not sure she knows what it is. You sure she doesn't want a kid? No, I don't think that's it. Though Anna had always made it very clear that she wasn't interested in having children, this had still been a recent nightmare of his, that she would suddenly want to become a parent at the age of 40. He had seen a few of those older parents around the neighborhood. They always looked haggard and out of breath. Would you ever want one? Joe shook his head slowly. Nah, I just never felt a calling. Chick took a sip of beer. I don't think men feel it like women do. Men just want to go spread their seed across the land. Probably true, but it seems like you should feel something, even a little. I mean, I know you want a kid, right? Absolutely. There you go. Yeah, but first I have to get someone to put up with me. I mean, come on, who would love me? I'm hideous. Joe laughed and smacked his friend's arm with the back of his hand. Stop saying that. You're not hideous. I'm going to die alone. You know it. I know it. Yeah, you're probably right. Chick shot him a look, then sighed loudly and took a sip of his beer. Going to the tiki thing? He said after a long silence. Who knows? It's months away. Spring may never come to Michigan. They're just going to find us all preserved in a giant ice floe 1,000 years from now. Joe sighed. Probably. How about you? Sure, I'm going. I got nothing else to do. I told you, I have no life. Chick downed the rest of his beer, stood up, and laid a five on the bar. Ah, well, I'm going to head home. They're showing Kiss Me Deadly on Turner Classics. Oh, that's such a good movie. Maybe I'll do the same. You're welcome to come by. It's like, nah, I should get home. Chick creased his forehead, pursed his lips, and nodded. Yeah, that would be less weird. Joe shook his head. You son of a bee. Way to use information spoken in confidence against me. Chick smiled. Next time you'll know better. He raised his hand and headed to the door. And just then, the turn of the conversation made Joe wonder about his life. While he was going to tiki parties or concerts or indie films or DIY craft fairs or gallery openings, most people his age were concerned with things like their kids' soccer games and parent-teacher conferences. Their children ate up their lives. He did not know much about parenting, but he knew that it was really hard work. Most parents, he felt, were just trying to survive. Someone at the paper had once said to him, "If my kids are alive at the end of the day, I feel like I've done my job." It seemed like he knew so many parents who had given up what they'd really wanted to do in order to provide for their children. The fact that they didn't mind that enormous sacrifice was amazing to Joe, even admirable, yet it wasn't what he wanted for himself.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Zadorian, and he just read to us from The Narcissism of Small Differences, the new book that just published. Michael, there are some this reminds me of some writers like Tom Perata, who managed to capture something in the everyday and show us what's much bigger about it. What's difficult about that kind of writing about people in that way?
You know, well, that's really interesting because it does, when people talk about my work, they do often say things like that. And I never really, I don't know, I don't really think of it or at least intentionally try to write in that manner. But I guess I do tend to write about the mundane a lot. And so it's just always been something that, I don't know, those are the things that resonate for me. When I just walk around the world, I always have like a little notebook, and sometimes someone will just say something, or I'll notice somebody do something strange, and it just clicks with me, and I feel like, all right, that is something there. And you know, and often they're really mundane things, but they just resonate with me in some way. So I think that's what I wind up drawing on when I sit down to write.
Is there anything that you think is particularly difficult about catching people in those moments?
You know, I don't know if there's anything difficult about it. It's sometimes, I think, just a matter of recognizing them. And I have that notebook, and sometimes it's anything. Someone will say something funny or interesting or strange, or they'll tell me about someone they know who did something, you know, odd. Like a friend of mine, he said, "Oh, I had my friend, I think I'll change his name. We'll call him Ed." And he always used to have a jar of urine in his car. And it would roll around the back seat. And it's like, that's a really strange thing to, you know, to just have that. And there's so many reasons. There's so many different reasons why you could have that that jar of urine rolling around on the floor of your car. But there's something really strange and evocative about that.
Well, I'm guessing Ed has an aversion to stopping to use convenience store facilities.
Maybe, you know, but he did get to, he was later known as Ed the Pee Jar Man.
That passage that we just heard is one of the more perceptive takes I've heard on parenthood from the non-parent perspective. It's funny because usually when we see novels that are about people coming to terms with their life choices, they are written from the perspective of people who had families and you know, are sort of second guessing the circumstances that got them there. But this is sort of a turnaround on that.
And it was important to me to talk about that. I just felt like it was one of the things that I could, one of the sort of different elements of this sort of story, which that could be different. So I wanted to represent that sort of whatever child-free couple. But I also didn't want to do it at the cost of, you know, some sort of, you know, what jauntist eye at parenthood either.
Yeah. This book was written under very different circumstances than what we're all living in right now. In fact, I think it was written a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
The book takes place in Detroit in 2009. And that was pretty much when I wrote it. I wrote it and started it in probably 2007. and
right on the cusp of the recession.
Yeah, exactly. And that became part of the, you know, definitely part of the book, the whole Detroit mentality of you're lucky you even have a job, because times were really bad in 2009. Mm-hmm. And anyways, I wrote it. I was really happy with it. I got nothing but praise from editors, but nobody wanted it. And, you know, and I, in retrospect, I wonder if it had to do with Detroit and the idea of a kind of comedy of manners or whatever taking place in Detroit. I think to a lot of editors seemed perverse almost, you know. And anyways, it went nowhere, and I wound up putting it in a, you know, a drawer, and but I didn't forget about it. And anyways, I got my last book published, Beautiful Music, and I mentioned this book to my editor at Akashic, and he said, yeah, I'd like to see that.
Joe and Anna, like, it's despite the fact that they're set in 2009, it's kind of funny that the two of them are sort of alone together, at least in trying to figure out their relationship. How do you imagine them in the present? Maybe what they went on to after the book leaves off.
You mean during the pandemic?
Yeah.
You know something? I think, I don't know. I think they'd be okay. I think they would, maybe they'd have gotten a bigger place by then, because sometimes a small townhouse can be really small if you're...
As people are learning right now.
Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine being in one of those tiny New York apartments that most New Yorkers live in. Yeah, I think it is interesting to have the book come out right now. And I mean, it's why we're talking, you know, over Zoom. You know, I mean, the literary model of marketing, you know, author marketing is so outmoded in many ways. And, you know, it's no fun to drive 5 hours and have four people show up at your bookstore event. I mean, there's always lots of other value attached to showing up at a bookstore and signing books or whatever. But it's in many ways, it's highly flawed. And so I think the whole idea of Facebook Live, Instagram Live, Zoom conversations is really going to become part of the new model after the pandemic, because I think we're all just realizing that this is in some ways easier, in some ways more difficult, at least technically sometimes, but we're all just doing the best we can and making it up as we go along and, you know, hoping for the best, really.
Michael Zadorian's new novel is The Narcissism of Small Differences, and he's going to be doing a Facebook Live event tonight where he'll read a little bit from the book and also take people's questions. We'll have a link up on our website. Michael, good talking with you. Hang in there.
Thank you. You too, April. Take care.